Hi, Alicia from the Lorehounds here. I'm genuinely excited about this new sponsor we're working with this fall because they've played an important role in my family's holidays and special events for many years now. I'm talking about Uncommon Goods, my and my family's favorite place to buy gifts for each other. Their official tagline is Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else, which is absolutely true. But if you know me at all, you know that I get excited about unique, quirky products made by artisans and other creative people. I just personally love scrolling through their website and stumbling across such specific items I'd never find anywhere else. Over the years, I've gotten everything from personalized puzzles to retro viewfinders with family photos to beer brewing or wine aroma kits. And my latest purchase is a 3-in-1 convertible bag. It's a gift for my mom to thank her for everything she's done to help me through my tougher moments. And I'm getting started on my holiday shopping earlier this year, too. Need to make sure that I leave plenty of time for gifts to arrive. With the recent unpredictability in shipping. If you're thinking the same, then good news. We can offer you a 15% discount when you shop on Uncommon Goods and drop our name. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lorehounds. That's uncommongoods.com/lorehounds for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Nicole.
David.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Are you ready to talk about a weird science fiction television show set in Albuquerque, directed by one of the greatest television showrunners there ever was?
Yeah. I mean, now's the time, right? I've never been more ready.
Excellent. So we're going to be, you and I, who knew? Who would have known?
What that? A crazy mismatched pair. Actually, I think we're quite well matched.
I think so. We're going to be talking about Pluribus, the new television show on Apple TV that is being showrun by Vince Gilligan, late of Better Call Saul and before that Breaking Bad, which was a television show that ushered in the... Is it, what do they call it? The platinum age of television or the golden age of television?
I don't know. You'd be the expert on that one.
All right. But along with Mad Men, Breaking Bad was one of these shows that really cracked open the prestige genre of television.
It's so good. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. So I was so excited when I didn't even know about this show until you mentioned it. And as you pitched it as, like, you know, it's Vince Gilligan, which I'm a fan of, and then... We were talking about egocentrism, which is a different conversation, but, and you said it was kind of like Truman Show E, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
We may have to watch that in comparison to the show.
Oh my gosh. It's got a different tone for sure.
Sure.
But, the premise seems similar enough that it intrigued me. Right. And then you mentioned that you were looking for a partner to do some coverage with for the Lorehounds, and I'm super duper interested. I can't wait to get started. The show looks fascinating to me.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about the show without spoiling it. We're going to do some trailer talk at the end of this podcast so that if somebody is curious about what we're covering and how we're going to cover it and sort of the broad premises of the show, but doesn't want to be spoiled, then by what little we already know, you know, just from the trailer. We'll put that at the end, but we'll talk about our coverage plans and talk a little bit about the overview of the show. But yeah, I didn't realize that you were a big Vince Gilligan fan.
I watched Breaking Bad in like real time when it came out, and then El Camino, the movie after. I didn't get into Better Call Saul because I got distracted with some other pile of content. But I want to go back and check it out. Did you like Better Call Saul?
You know, there's going to be people on the internet who have opinions about what I'm about to say about my own opinion.
Okay.
And I find, for me, that Better Call Saul was a more satisfying watch than Breaking Bad was.
What? People say that. Like, a lot of people say things like that.
So the storytelling, the level of storytelling, the performances, the the stakes involved in the show, the character, just everything about it, I absolutely adored and loved.
Adored, even. Those are strong words.
There are scenes in there that I know some people grate on, but to me are some of the best television. Like, I won't, and since you haven't seen it, I won't say too much, but there's that Detective Mike, right? Who's, mm-hmm. or who, you know, used to, the guy who used to be a police officer. And, yeah. So he's in Better Call Saul. So there's these number of vignettes throughout the show over the course of the season, where he has to do some super secret, double secret squirrel sneaker, you know, sneaking around, doing his thing. And then they'll set it to this like real funky, you know, down-tempo jazz. Some people call that lo-fi. there are with just these really cool soundscapes. And then he's like creeping around, doing his thing. And they blow my mind every time I see them. I absolutely
have you ever talked? So I co-host a podcast, Never Mind the Music, on our network with my friend and I guess colleague Mark. Really into music. I'm really into psychology. I wonder if Mark has opinions on that. Have you ever talked to him about it?
I've never talked to him about it, but I would be surprised if he didn't have opinions because he's Mark.
Yeah, he's got opinions, and we love them.
Yeah, we love Mark. I know. I'm giving him a. I love podcasting with him too, as well.
Yeah, we have our gentle ribbing is really part of our bit that we do.
Exactly. But yeah, no, I haven't ever talked to him about that show, so that'd be interesting. So anyway, and then Ray Seahorn, who is the star of this show, I absolutely love her performance and characterization.
I'm in the dark. I don't even know who that is or anything about the characters in the show. I got to check it out. I got to add to the list.
So you saw the trailer. That's Ray Seahorn.
The trailer in the show. Was she in Better Call Saul too?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, is this like in the universe of Better Call Saul? Okay.
No, but it is in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
And it is Vince Gilligan.
I see.
Yeah.
It's all making sense now.
Right. Yeah.
So you're sparked. So
Ray Seahorn. Her character played the love interest of Saul Goodman in Better Call Saul.
Oh.
And so the show is really about their relationship.
That's
as much
tricky.
As it is an origin story for Saul Goodman, which is a nom de guerre, as it were, it's as much about how he became who he was in Breaking Bad as... And integral to who Saul is in Breaking Bad is Ray Seahorn's character in Better Call Saul.
So it's like how he broke bad.
Exactly.
I get it. It's all making so much sense now.
And it's been a minute since I've watched it, so a lot of the details and the names aren't fresh in my memory, so I know people are out there screaming.
Do you think we should rewatch / watch it all in advance of the Pluribus?
Oh, right.
Drop?
Yeah, I'm just going to Matrix in and go, what is it, 4 seasons, 5 seasons?
Right.
Now you've secretly incepted that idea into my brain. So right.
There's another bizarro version of you somewhere just locked in a windowless room, just like all the monitors just playing simultaneous Better Call Saul episodes. Just downloading it all.
Imagine. Yeah, I may have to dip into that. The final episode, oh God, how many seasons was it? Like 4 seasons, I think. Was just sublime. The final shot. It's like one of those oil painting shots.
I love that.
It completely wraps around to the very beginning of the season or the very beginning of the series. And it's just, it's so good. Better Call Saul. So I have to say I'm a Vince Gilligan fan, but I'm not a fanboy. So I don't know a lot of details about him. So I think that's one of the things that I'll do as we go over Pluribus is try to learn a little bit more about him and his game.
I'd like to as well, like as a case study, because there's so much consistency in his work. And now that this show's set in Albuquerque too, like what is it? Like, is he from there? Does he have a history there? Is he just drawn to like the vortexes in the desert? I don't know. Right? Like there's stuff to dig into Vince Gilligan. He seems like a weirdo in the best way. And I want to like know everything about him. So I'm going to fangirl out and see what I can find.
Holy shit, there were 6 seasons of Better Call Saul.
I can't commit to that. I just finally finished Game of Thrones like 2 months ago. I can't do it again. And I didn't love it. Breaking news. 40, wasn't impressed. 50,
60, there are 63 episodes of Better Call Saul.
No, I can't. I'm like, there's too many things to watch. You know, Love is Blind is still dropping new episodes as right. we're recording. I have to catch up on that. So
given that they're not connected, you're off the hook.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. It's just like that
when we did coverage on Agatha All Along and you guys said, oh, in order to watch that and know what we're talking about. Oh, it was, you were like, oh, you have to watch, WandaVision. And if you need to know what's going on in WandaVision, you have to watch like these 20 movies. I was like, I just don't have time to catch up. So I'm glad that this can kind of be a freestanding show.
So apparently it is greenlit for 2 seasons.
I've heard that.
So Apple went ahead and just said, Vince Gilligan, what do you need? He said 2 seasons. He said all in.
I even heard that 3 seasons is most likely.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So therein again, I haven't done a lot of news consumption prior to developing this show. So we're going to do that between now and then. I'm going to try to catch up a little bit on the background details. But the other thing is I want to be a little bit, I want to enjoy the unfolding of the show. Mm. And so I don't want to know too much to know about what's going on. I really want the experience of watching it fresh.
I love to go into things blind and experience them in like real time with the audience. I don't want to know things in advance. I want to be shocked week to week. These episodes are dropping week to week, right? Or are they
Correct.
In batches?
Okay. Yep. It is week to week. It is going to be 9 episodes for season 1. They're dropping 2 on the first night, which is going to be Friday, November 7th.
Okay.
And then they'll be out every Friday thereafter.
Cool. So our first recap will be of the first 2 episodes.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay, we'll just squeeze 2 episodes into 1 episode.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah. A lot of times we like to break up 1 and 2, but this one, the way that life is right now, I think it's just going to be better if we just package 1 and 2 together.
I think so too.
Yeah. And then I think our tentative plan right now is for you and I to record our episode breakdowns on Sundays.
Yep.
And then ideally we can get the episodes out on Mondays.
So that gives folks the weekend to watch.
Correct.
And then to listen in to our recaps and our thoughts on Monday morning on their way to work, which is
exactly
great.
And then we'll set up a new email for it, pluribus@thelorehounds.com for feedback.
Awesome.
We will also set up a forum thread, the thing on Discord where we can silo each of the episodes for a television show so that you can drop into an episode without being spoiled if you're still playing catch up on it.
Now, I have a bad habit with the Nevermind the Music Discord feed in that I only log in after I've drank like a glass of wine and get kind of like yappy and snarky. I'm mm-hmm. going to try not to, but I think it's part of my brand and charm at this point that that's what the people want. They want me at midnight just popping off on Discord. So
that's the way it's gonna go.
I'm not gonna change for you.
No,
sorry.
You do you.
I can't wait to I love engaging with folks in real time on that feed. It's been really, really fun for our pod. So I can't wait to see what they have to say about this Pluribus show.
Yes.
It looks cool.
It's gonna be cool. So that's our coverage plans. That's what we know about the show so far. We're both fans of Gilligan. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn a little bit more about him, maybe watch The Truman Show. We'll do a little lorehoundy stuff where we're trying to look at context. The show, in a minute, we'll start talking about the trailer. But the official log line, this is not spoilery, is that the show follows the most miserable person on Earth and the one who must save the world from happiness. So I think this sounds like a mystery box to some degree, right? There's some central mystery going on here. This is Vince Gilligan nonsense, right? So it's going to be fun, dramatic. We're going to get a lot of opportunity to discuss character and character motivation and storyline and plot. But I think there's going to be a very interesting component, psychologically speaking.
For sure.
Which I think you're going to have a lot of interesting things to say about.
Well, I'm someone that the idea to like save the world from happiness, I'm very interested in this idea of toxic positivity. And this is something our culture is doing a lot now, that we're not allowed to be sad. We're supposed to put on a brave face and look on the bright side, and everything has a silver lining. And I think that's just so fundamentally flawed that, you know, we're doing everything we can to prevent low moments culturally, but like they're here, right? So I think that there's a lot of metaphor happening in this these storylines for the show, I hope, and looking back to just society as a whole. And those are connections I'm hoping to make. If you're not familiar with my podcast, Nevermind the Music, I'm a psychology professor by trade, and I focus mostly on developmental psychology and counseling psychology. And I'm a real big nerd for neuroscience and brain chemistry, like who isn't? So I'm really eager to add some value to this conversation from that perspective. And I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for that just in that tagline alone.
Right? Exactly. So from here forward, we're going to start talking about the show a little bit more just in the publicly available information. We've made the sacrificial offerings to the trailer, the gods who control the fate of the trailers in the world. But so far, we have received no answer, which means they probably are not going to give us screeners. Did I say trailers? I meant screeners.
I'm okay not having a screener. I think I would be too tempted to watch it all at once. I don't know if that's
a dangerous thing.
And I can't be trusted. So I like it dosed out to me.
So Apple is usually very generous with their screeners, except when they're high-profile shows, when they're expecting a lot of buzz, and I believe that this show is of that caliber. So they
it's
have,
fine with
you
me.
Know,
even okay. Even the option to like have a screener is so bizarre to me. I'm like, who am I?
Exactly. Who am I to write?
Who am I? I'm like a college professor.
The crazy thing about screeners is they can check your bona fides really well. It's very easy to keep you on the naughty list if you break the rules of it. Mm-hmm. And it behooves them a lot, in a lot of cases, to have people out
there.
Yeah,
for like shows that need buzz. I don't think this is going to need much buzz.
Exactly, this is not going to need buzz. And then or they A-list access only, like only big shows and big people. Or I'm sure there's going to be an official podcast, right? So they try to drive people in those directions. So, but that said, we're going to go and start talking now about the trailer and a little bit of background information. So if you don't want to know any more about the show and you just want to go in as fresh as you possibly can, we'll be recording usually on Sundays, episodes usually out on Mondays, pluribus at thelorehounds.com. Episodes drop the television show on Apple TV on Friday nights in the United States starting November 7th with a double episode drop. And then it'll run for 7 more episodes. It's going to overlap Christmas. So we'll be for the finale, we're going to have to juggle our schedules a little bit because I'll be traveling. So, but we will make it work. Okay. So going forward now, spoilers, check out now. We'll see you on the first episode. If you got to bail now, cool. So the story synopsis reads, set in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the series follows author Carol Sturka, who seems to be the only person immune to an unexplained virus that transforms the world's population into content and optimistic citizens.
You know, and what I've been reading about it, they call the character, quote, Sad Carol, unquote. And I'm wondering if that's like her name in the script.
Right.
Like Sad Carol. And it's so wild in the trailer because it is very Truman Show-y that it seems like we just know that they all know that she's sad.
Right.
And they're all really trying to get her to join them on the other side of this like happiness threshold.
Right.
And they'll do whatever it takes to get her to become, it's like a one of us situation, like come join us. and she seems very resistant to joining them, or at least confused about what's happening. And it's very ambiguous, obviously, because they want us to watch the show.
Right.
So I'm fascinated to see, like, what happened. Like, was it, like, an actual viral virus that spread around and people got sick, and then they, when they recovered from the illness, they were happy, and she was immune to that somehow? Or if it was just a switch flipped and one day everyone was happy and she wasn't, and they all knew. I need to watch the trailer another 10 times because I'm probably missing a lot of stuff. But I'm just wondering, like, how did this all happen?
So we see the great scene of her talking to a television, but using a telephone, and there's somebody in front of the White House seal.
Yeah.
And he's looking very presidential, saying like, oh, we're going to help you figure it out because we want you to join us and be happy along with the rest of us.
And they're like talking to her. It's not, he's like not addressing the nation. He's like talking to her in what looks like a presidential address.
Right. And wild. Then just before that, there is an interesting scene of somebody else driving in, where did it go? Here we go. In a yellow convertible with a license plate L Fritz in an MG convertible, but the license plate is in Paraguay.
Mm-hmm.
And they show this sort of coastal town and this sort of beautiful thing. So there's another character somewhere else in the world that I think is going to be central to our storyline.
I wonder if they're sad too.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
He doesn't look happy as I'm looking through this. He's looking very serious and concerned. Yeah, I'm scrubbing the trailer right now.
He's not happy.
No.
Despite the really cool car.
And there is there are other scenes. I believe this is also in Paraguay, where it seems like there's some disaster kind of stuff, buildings on fire and sort of sociological breakdown and chaos.
Right, which is crazy. You think if everyone's happy, there wouldn't be that. Like, I wonder what initiated this. I wonder what happened.
And it sounds like it's a virus. Mm-hmm. And they even show some medical stuff, people in rubber suits and stuff, in containment suits.
I love an contagion moment for sure.
Right. And yeah, I might do one of my trailer breakdown things where I just sort of go through
like scene by scene
and put that out and talk about like just what we're seeing, not like interpreting it so much as just sort of observing.
Like an accessible trailer.
Exactly.
There is one scene in the trailer that I was really fascinated by. Like, she's at this rental car place or something. And he was like, we'll do whatever we can to make you happy.
Yes.
And she's like, would you give me a hand grenade? He was like, yeah. He was like, would you give me a tank? And he was like, yeah. She's like, really? Like, you probably shouldn't, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that really made me think of this idea. Like, do things buy happiness? Like, can goods and does money buy happiness? And that kind of got me spiraling about that. So I can't wait to, there are a lot of studies about like, does money buy happiness? If so, how much? And they put like a number on it, like a quantifiable number that this much money would make you happy. And I just, that kept rattling. We'll get to it later when we talk through the show in more detail episode by episode, but just a little teaser. I'm really interested in that like sociological element of happiness and how that plays out here. Like, will she only be happy when she finds another sad person to mirror? Right?
That's interesting. I was thinking the other day too, I've been really busy with life and work and stuff. And I actually have not been out of I work from home. So I haven't been out of the house a bunch. And I was noticing my mood and my energy levels were down. And I went to a fitness class the other day, one that I would regularly go to in the past. And I came home. Not only did my body feel a little bit better because I did some Pilates, got some core work done or whatever. And it's not like I was chatty with a whole lot of people there.
Yeah.
But just being around other people changed my mood.
For sure. Like radically. Humans are incredibly social. We're social people. Even the most introverted, quiet, most reserved person, you need to be around other humans, right? For a couple hours every day. And I'm wondering,
it's like
too,
like you need to get them out of your vitamin D. You need sunlight.
You need something and
yeah.
some other input. And I wonder like when, and we'll deep dive into all of this, like when did Vince Gilligan write this and come up with this? Because if it was during COVID, which it probably was, or at least shortly after, given the timing of it all, there had to be some even like subconscious reflection of that COVID isolation. Because this main character is feeling very isolated, but also very, she has a spotlight on her too.
Right.
And I'm wondering, I can't wait to read more about Vince Gilligan's intention and his premise behind this. And once interviews start coming out with him, if he doesn't seem to talk that much, but maybe, who knows, to hear some of his motivations for the story and the character development here, because I'm seeing connections to isolation during COVID and the fact that there is increased rates of depression post-COVID, increased rates of anxiety, increased rates of agoraphobia and not wanting to leave your house. So I'm wondering how many of those themes are picked up on here. And I hope it's a lot because I think it's really interesting and I can't wait to unpack it all. I'll be disappointed if it's not even scratched at, but I think it's going to have to be.
It's really interesting to see too, the, you know, my daughter's in elementary school and the couple of the grades just in front of her really kind of have gone through that whiplash of COVID suspensions and masking and all of that stuff. And not to get into the politics of it, but it's just, it was an amazing sociological, I don't want to say experiment because that brings the wrong sense of it too. But it's a really interesting phenomenon, and it really affected a group. There's a generational group that is moving through from elementary through college, right? Because a lot of those kids have now graduated college.
Yeah.
That it really did something to the patterns, and we don't know yet what the impacts are.
I have our kids are around the same age, so my daughter was in kindergarten when COVID happened. When it first happened, she went through kindergarten and most of first grade.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think we're a year behind you.
Yeah, I think so. But I noticed in my college students who were in late middle school probably during COVID, which I think developmentally was the trickiest time to be isolated from your peers and stuck at home with your – I'm thinking of, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old, not having your friends. That's huge, right?
Right.
And I do notice in my college students that kind of came up through this COVID era of masking, they don't like register emotion on their faces in the same way that you or I might. And they have they'll say like, oh, I'm feeling happy. Oh, I'm feeling sad. But they're like blank faces.
Interesting.
And I think that they just didn't have to perform as much their happiness. Right. Like we grew up having to perform your happiness. I mean, I'm getting really too into it now for this little podcast, but what else is new?
Yeah,
what do you think also about how that's so gendered? As a woman, I'm always like, oh, he's being told, like, oh, smile. You know, smile.
Right,
you should smile when you walk in a room.
Icky.
Which is toxic for a whole slew of reasons.
Right.
So I'm wondering if we were just brought up to be more performative with our feelings.
Interesting.
And then when thinking back of this to this Pluribus trailer, I'm really interested that the sad character is a female character.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how it would read differently if it was a male character and if it would have the same tone and weight to like, oh, we have to make her happy.
Mm-hmm.
Would it feel the same if it was a male character? So that's something, a theme I'm hoping to kind of pull out as we explore this season is looking at how gendered it gets. And I'm wondering if it will even get there at all, but I can see that as potential too.
And I think that's something that Rae Seahorn brings to her performances. She played, her character's name was Kim Wexler in Better Call Saul. And we see for a lot of those six episodes, She's not a happy person. Mm. There's a lot of struggle in her character. And when she does get happy, right, when there are times where she is happy, even that is muted in some ways. And so you have to see her happiness in her actions and her responses to things, agreeing to do something. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's go do that. And you're like, whoa, she's like overjoyed by that. But she has this. But her as an actor and the what she's bringing with her craft really has that tension in balance of these internal feelings that are being surfaced over in a bit of an opaque glass.
In that you psychology, can't really see. We would call that a flat affect.
Yes.
That she has a relatively flat affect.
She has a relatively
flat highs and lows and facial expressions.
But you feel her nonetheless. Yeah. There's a palpableness to her on screen. And when she does emote and react emotionally, you're like, oh, hello. You know, what's going on there?
She served as kind of a muse for Vince Gilligan for this part. I mean, if he cast her.
Interesting. Yeah.
He must have. Did he write it as well, or did he have a writing team?
I was just looking at the Wikipedia page for that. He is credited as the writer for on the first two episodes. So he's credited as the writer and director for 1 and 2, but he's also the series creator.
So maybe he noticed what you noticed in this actress and her flat affect and her expression and was inspired by it somehow.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Because if he cast her in this, he probably wrote it with her in mind.
Because the Better Call Saul story, you know, Jimmy McGill is the character who's the person who becomes Saul Goodman later. He does not have a flat affect.
No, the opposite.
He has a manic affect in many ways.
Or high affect, right?
High affect. Mm-hmm. And he is all over the place where she's this constant. But yeah. Ray Seahorn, if you hear interviews with, what's his name, who played that guy? Good job, podcaster. Who is
You're
playing
doing
better?
Great.
Thank you. Especially, it's a busy week right now.
I hear that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah.
When you hear conversations about Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn in their process for Better Call Saul, they're really hardworking actors and they were really into their characters and they were really into the story and they worked and worked and worked and they worked well together. So there was this whole creative dynamic that was happening, you know, with Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould and, you know, all of the actors and production. So in many ways, Better Call Saul is a trickier show to produce because you have a very specific target that you have to hit in terms of making a prequel show line up with the past show. So that's really hard to do, period. And to make it line up and make sense, and to be able to go into Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad, and every time you see Saul Goodman, you're like, oh, it makes sense now because when this...
Need to watch it.
Yeah, to make it all line up is very difficult. And so it took a more refined production. Mm. And so when you have these creatives who are writing and acting and doing this so much, I have no doubt that Gilligan saw something with Ray Seahorn. She even directed one of the episodes, apparently.
Wow. That's cool.
Where I think this is a real breakout. She's got quite a good filmography, but I think Better Call Saul really took her to a new level. She was able to take her craft to a new level in the conditions of Better Call Saul.
And it's going to be really cool to see what Vince Gilligan is what he's capable of, even though that sounds kind of condescending, but what he's capable of without the restrictions of being married to the prequel idea and being married to like mapping back to Breaking Bad or getting the arc to fit a pre-existing like coordinate, that I wonder how far the show's going to go. The fact that they're not putting screeners out to well-renowned podcasters like us, right? And the fact that they're already signed on for at least two, possibly three seasons.
Right.
Without even, with just the trailer dropping.
Right.
Lots of buzz, lots of mystery around the show, lots of potential. Kind of rooting back to our own like collective COVID trauma. I think it's going to touch a lot of people in that way of like the illness and quarantine and being isolated. That's going to appeal to a lot of folks that are looking for an outlet for those feelings. Again, I'm a counseling psychologist. It's going to come up, right? So I'm eager to see how he puts all these pieces together. It seems like he's got the works of that can be something really like some real alchemy can happen here with this show. Yeah. So I can't wait for the first two episodes to drop. I can't wait to spend all weekend watching it over and over again and kind of processing it through with you on this this podcast for our listeners. I think it's going to be really fun.
Perfect wrap up. Look at you, professional podcaster.
I'm a podcaster. I think it's happened.
You got this done. You got this in the bag. Well, I'm excited to cover the show, and I'm excited to cover the show with you. It was an unexpected surprise. And so,
yeah,
we were just chatting
in another context, and you were like, oh, are you going to watch the show? And I was like, oh, I didn't even know about it until you mentioned it 3 days ago, and now it's all I can think about. So we're off to a good start.
So we will be out with our first episode coverage on, let me get my calendar here. So the show drops Friday the 7th, and our first episode should drop Monday the 10th.
Awesome.
So we're just going to put it out on the main feed. We're not going to do anything special like that. So just look for us then and there. Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you. Can't wait.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.